Our reading today comes from Luke chapter 8, starting at verse 22. One day, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake so that the boat was being swamped, and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided, and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him." Well, I wonder if you remember a TV series called The Krypton Factor. It was one of my favourites as a kid growing up. At one point in the show, the contestants had to watch a short film very carefully, because at the end of the film, they would bring one of the actors onto the live stage with 9 other lookalikes. And from this identity parade, the contestants would choose which one they thought was the actor from the film. And the voiceover would then say, "Would the real PC Plod, or whoever, please step forward?" Well, when it comes to God's Messiah, there are plenty of Messiah lookalikes. There's the Messiah of the paintings, baby Jesus looking all cute and harmless, the self-appointed messiahs of the cults, the messiahs who liberate oppressed people from tyrannical rule. Amidst all the different claims, we often want the real Messiah to step forward and reveal himself. Over these few weeks, the readings give us an opportunity to see the real Messiah revealing himself for who he is. And today's passage reveals that God's true Messiah is no impotent baby Jesus, meek and mild, forever resting in his mother's arms. His power and authority is without equal and extends even to the forces of nature. So there they are in a boat on Lake Galilee, and Lake Galilee is 13 miles long and 8 miles wide, and it's well known for its sudden storms that seem to come from nowhere in seconds. And Jesus has amazingly fallen asleep. He's human like the rest of us. He did get tired and he needed a bit of shut-eye from time to time. But all of a sudden, verse 23, a squall comes down on the lake, swamping the boat with water, and they're in great danger. So the disciples go and wake him up. "Master, Master, we're going to drown." Or in Mark's gospel it says, "Don't you care if we're going to drown?" But have you ever asked yourself the question why they want to wake him up? What do they want him to do? Perform a miracle? No, they're clearly not expecting him to perform a miracle. That's clear from their lack of faith. If I was in a boat in a storm with a friend asleep, I'd be shouting at him, "Wake up, get on and help us bail out the water." I think that's all they want him to do. That's all they expect. I mean, they may have seen him perform miracles, healing miracles, driving out demons, but no one can control the wind and the waves. They just want him to help in a practical way. But instead, Jesus does something quite unexpected. He gets up and speaks to the wind and the waves. He rebukes them and they listen and they obey him. The storm subsides and everything goes calm, revealing not just his power, but his identity. You may be aware that this event is a fulfillment of Psalm 107. Listen to the words of Psalm 107, written hundreds of years before the birth of Jesus, and see if you agree with the similarities. Psalm 107, verse 23. "Others went out on the sea in ships. They saw the works of the Lord, his wonderful deeds in the deep. For he spoke and stirred up a tempest that lifted high the waves. They mounted up to the heavens and went down to the depths. In their peril, their courage melted away. They reeled and staggered like drunken men. They were at their wits' end. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distress. He stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. They were glad when it grew calm, and he guided them to their desired haven." Well, isn't that exactly what's happening here? Jesus here is doing the same things that the Lord Yahweh does. It's a remarkably precise fulfillment of the psalm. And it's not surprising then that it elicits in his disciples emotions of fear and amazement. And it's not surprising they ask, "Who is this? Even the wind and waves obey him." and they're just beginning to figure it out. Jesus may just be God. But notice also what Jesus says to the disciples. Where is your faith? Where is your faith? You see, the disciples were not expecting to see Jesus work. They panicked and put their faith in their buckets to bail out the water. And I think it's a question Jesus would want to ask the church today in the West. Where is your faith? Not, do you believe that God created the universe, or do you believe in the resurrection? But today, where's your faith in the power of God today? In the West, the God of the Bible has become a little bit lifeless and dead. A nice idea, maybe even the object of our Sunday worship, but not really alive from day to day or capable of intervening. From a historical perspective, we can put it down to some German liberal scholars in the first half of the 20th century who began to tell us to abandon the supernatural claims of the Bible and that the miracles were just myths to communicate the beliefs of the New Testament writers. This anti-supernaturalism has been slowly sucking the life out of the church in the West and given rise to a generation of doubters in the power of God, to the point where many have denied his very existence and given up their faith altogether. Because, of course, if it is just a mere collection of bedtime stories, then why bother with Christianity at all? Our very salvation depends on divine intervention. Now, of course, there is the age-old problem of demanding miraculous signs for the wrong reasons. But there is a desire, a right desire, to see the power of God displayed that's genuinely humble and submissive, born out of desperation and weakness. And in the global South, in South America, Africa and Asia, faith is booming. The church is growing exponentially. On 11th of November 2011, 71,000 people attended an all-night prayer meeting in Cairo. In June last year, 500,000 people met for prayer in Nigeria. In Korea, back in October 1994, over a million people met in the Yoida Plaza for the largest prayer meeting in history. And I think Jesus would want us too to recapture the power of God at work today. I'm not a big prayer warrior. I'm not on my knees as much as I'd like to be, but I found myself last week praying for a project for another group of Christians I'm involved with, that God would provide for us financially for this project, without the need to go begging, as it were, to those outside the church. It wasn't a long or eloquent prayer, but the following morning I had a phone call from a friend telling me that a gift of £1,000 had been promised for that same project. Is God, you see, the first person you turn to when things go wrong? When you need something? When you've fallen ill, do you turn to God in prayer? When you go to an interview, do you ask God for his guidance? When you're facing an impossibly difficult situation or an impossibly difficult person, do you ask God to turn it around? Because the scriptures never exhort us to greater independence, but to a greater humility and dependency on the Father who made us. Now let me finish with the words from the psalmist, who wrote simply these words: some trust in chariots and some trust in horses. Of course, both of those are very powerful. But we trust in the name of the Lord our God. Amen.